So we've completed our journey through the seven letters, the seven chosen topics, and now I just want to come to give you some ideas of a tradition about Paul's death, the end of his wonderful life. In the first letter of Clement, written from Rome by the Bishop of Rome? Rome was one of the last of the communities to have a mono-episcopacy, one bishop in the whole city. So he would have been the leader of one of the Christian synagogues, probably. And the story is he was in the house of Clement. Clemens was one of the big families in the Senate, and he was a Jewish slave in that family, and then came to be one of the episcopoi, presbyteroi, prohistaminoi, how's your Greek? These characters that were in, and he wrote this letter to Corinth at the end of the first century, sextant, and it reads, "Owing to envy, Paul also obtained the reward of patient endurance. After being seven times thrown into captivity, compelled to flee, stoned, after preaching both in the East and West, he gained the illustrious reputation due to his faith, having taught righteousness to the whole world and come to the extreme limit of the West." We'll comment on that in a moment. "And suffered martyrdom under the prefects. Thus was he removed from the world and went into the holy place, having proved himself a striking example of patience." So that's written at the end of the first century to Corinth. The extreme limit of the West, which he says there, has been interpreted as a reference to Spain. And that's a likely interpretation. It's possible that Paul did fulfill his dream and that he headed to Spain upon his release from custody in Rome. This would have meant going into an area where Greek was not the common language. If he did, in fact, go to Spain, problems of communication may have been enough to convince him to cut his mission short and return to his earlier mission fields in the East. This is all uncertain, but the best I can offer you. Ignatius of Antioch, in the opening years of the second century, that's the Antioch in Syria, where the church were first called Christians and which was the basis where Paul headed off on his mission. The Ignatius of Antioch, in the opening years of the second century, also speaks of Paul's martyrdom in his letter to the Ephesians, chapter 12, as does Tertullian, who is from Carthage, North Africa, just below Sicily, in his Prescriptions Against Heresy, the 36th chapter. In his History of the Church, composed in the early years of the 4th century, Eusebius, who comes from Caesarea, Caesarea, where Paul was imprisoned there for 2 years, Eusebius writes of Paul's release from prison and his martyrdom. Eusebius has written the earliest history of the church. Fascinating document, still available. And he did a lot of research for years and came up, and we know a lot about the early church thanks to Eusebius's hard work. Well, he writes this in chapter 2. "After defending himself, the apostle was again sent on the ministry of preaching, and coming a second time to the same city," and he's talking about Rome, "he suffered martyrdom under Nero. During his imprisonment, he wrote the second epistle to Timothy, indicating at the same time that his first defence had taken place and that his martyrdom was at hand." So that's what Eusebius came up with, having investigated, and that's what I've been following with you. It is recorded that Paul was beheaded in Rome itself, and that Peter likewise was crucified under Nero. This account of Peter and Paul is substantiated by the fact that their names are preserved in the cemeteries of that place even to this present day. This is Eusebius as well. In fact, still there. if you go to the cemetery of Sebastian, San Sebastiano, there's a place there where you'll see the bones of both of them were put during the ravaging of Rome. They were kept there for, I don't know how long, 100 years or something, and it's got a little sign to indicate that. And then they were taken back, when things settled down, back to the two places on the Via Appia, where Paul is, and then over to the Vatican, where Peter was reburied there, where the big basilica is. So that's in the early 4th century, Eusebius, there's cemeteries dedicated to Peter and Paul in Rome. And he continues, this is still Eusebius, in the history of the church, still chapter 2. It is confirmed likewise by Caius, a member of the church who arose under Zephyrinus, the bishop of Rome. He, in a published disputation with Proclus, the leader of the Phrygian heresy, speaks as follows concerning the places where the sacred corpses of the aforesaid apostles are laid. And he quotes now from Caius. I can show the trophies of the apostles. Trophies meaning like an indication of burial. For if you will go to the Vatican or the Ostian way, sorry, I said Via Appia, the Via Ostiensis, you will find the trophies of those who laid the foundations of this church. It's a quote from a priest in Rome. And then Eusebius continues, and that they both suffered martyrdom at the same time is stated by Dionysius, the bishop of Corinth, in his epistle to the Romans in the following words, and he quotes him, you have thus, by such an admonition, bound together the planting of Peter and of Paul at Rome and Corinth. For both of them planted and likewise taught us in our Corinth. And they taught together in like manner in Italy and suffered martyrdom at the same time. So that's what we've got from the early 4th century history. No reason to doubt it. He did his homework. Nothing's been discovered to question it. So I think we're pretty peaceful about the ancient tradition. And if you were to happen to go to Rome, one of the things you just have to do is find someone who can book ahead and go down under St. Peter's into the Scavi excavations. I'm using Scavi because that's what they call it. And you'll find there that when Pope Pius the 11th was being buried, just after his death, of course, and when Pope Pius the 12th was there, when they were burying him in the crypt of St. Peter's, it fell through, like he was the last to be fitted in, and that fell through and there was a gap. And privately, Pius the 12th got expert archaeologists to dig into there. It was all done without people knowing, except the people who were doing it, and find out what they were. And it was very disappointing because they found under St. Peter's, where it had fallen through, a pagan cemetery. But as they worked their way towards the altar, like along St. Peter's underneath, it got narrower and narrower and narrower. Then it came to a point where there were Christian symbols. And then when it got, I mean, this is the amazing thing, because if you look at St. Peter's now, you can't tell because it's been filled in, you know, it's all. But it's Vatican Hill, and if you go inside, it climbs even further. The trouble is, Constantine built the basilica above in the most stupid place you could possibly do. Okay, you've got a plain here, you've got a hill. Well, everyone who's sensible would build there or there. He built there. So you had to push half the hill down to flatten out this. You had to do all this reconstruction and to do all that. And you'd wonder why he would have gone to the trouble. Then, later on, another altar was built by Clement, somebody, I've forgotten the number now, above that. Then you've got the present altar. And if you go right down from the present altar to the next altar to the next altar, you get Peter's grave. That's why they built it there. It's right above the trophy. And of course they had to build it there. And as it got bigger, it got more awkward to build, but they did. And now you've got this great St. Peter's, which they were going to have big bell towers on it, but they can't. It couldn't take the weight. So that plan dropped out, and that's why they end a bit abruptly, the front of the St. Peter's. So there's no doubt St. Peter was... And they there's a wall there with P, you know, Peter in Greek, and they've got coins from Palestine were discovered there, and the people had come over and, you know, throw a coin into the thing, kind of thing. So no doubt that Peter was there, buried there. Now they've just got the place marked, and his head is supposed to be, I haven't looked into this, I don't know if it's true or not, in San Giovanni Laterano. There's the head of Peter and the head of Paul above the altar, and Paul is buried underneath the St. Peter, St. Paul's outside the walls too. So anyone who doubts that kind of history is just determined to doubt. So that's why. So finishing off my topic, leadership in the early church was different names used for different people. Names are not, in any sense, important. I don't think, are they? And they vary depending on the community and so on. I think there would have been a lot of flexibility. It seems there was a lot of flexibility in it. Then it gradually came, by the end of the first century and into the second century, following the Roman system, see, of having a senator, a governor somewhere, and then other people under. So the diocese, there was a pagan diocese, so there became a Christian diocese and so on. So the system followed the culture of the place and the day, and that's of course what you do. Then it developed. And then it developed into, when things changed politically, when you stopped having kings and princes and you started to have a republican people, the church stayed with kings and princes, and the system doesn't tend to change for good and ill. Well, dear brothers and sisters, that's it. But there's room for change, don't you think? And I think we just have to think and pray and be honest with each other about it all, and do what works. As far as I know, that's the essence of leadership, is to find something that actually works. I'm trying to work out how to say this, excuse me. You'd think I'd know by now. Why won't that say...
Before we get on.